And welcome once again to another edition of A Plain Answer here at Redeemer Broadcasting. I'm Dan Elmendorf. On the Zoom line with us today is our friend Pastor Paul Murphy. And Pastor Paul, it's great to have you on.
Thanks. Always good to be here with you, Dan.
I'm looking at you on Zoom and got all these books on either side in your study there.
Got more outside, too.
A lot of books. I'm of the age now where I don't read as much because my eyes are bothering me. So I use the computer display, and I spend more time there. But anyway, that kind of reminds us of the idea of education. The other day, you did some kind of a interactive, I don't know, sermon or whatever at your church, and it was about education. That's very important. I feel that we have seen our young people, the next generation, either blessed or hurt greatly by whatever education their parents choose.
Absolutely.
And let's talk a little bit about that. We don't claim to have all the answers. We don't want to shove a solution down somebody's throat because each family is different. Their resources are different.
This is true.
So it's one of the reasons why I like to see our taxes reduced so that Christian families can save up a little money and afford a Christian education for their family, whether it be homeschooling or private school or what have you. But why don't you take it away and get us thinking about education?
Sure. My thesis is simple. It's that education for a Christian must be Christian education, whether that's institutional or domestic, as you said.
Mm-hmm.
People have different abilities. People have different resources. So you have to allow for that. And what I'm about to say is not to be critical or condemning of anybody that is in the public education system. Almost everybody in our church has gone to public school.
Oh, yeah. When I was a kid.
Yeah. We have two teachers that teach in the public school. I'm very thankful for Christian teachers in the public school system. But as Christians and as church, we ought to be self-conscious about responsibilities towards covenant youth. And education for a Christian should be Christian education. I have six reasons why that's so. The first is the glory of God. And, of course, we are familiar with 1 Corinthians 10:31, that whether you eat or drink or whatsoever you do, do all to the glory of God. And that includes the education of covenant youth. And secular state education cannot do that and does not do that.
Right.
If you're familiar with the educational philosophical foundations of secular education, John Dewey, Horace Mann, and them, it's thoroughly humanistic and self-consciously intending to rid education of any Christian.
It is, isn't it?
Whatsoever. Yeah.
Yes.
So, the second reason is that students are disciples. Jesus said, "Come unto me, all you that labor are heavy laden, and you will find rest for your souls. Take my yoke upon you, for it is light." And a yoke in Jesus' day was, or rabbi, was his teaching. So when Jesus says, "Take my yoke upon you," he's not talking about like an oxen yoke. He's talking about his teaching. And so since students are disciples, they need to be taught Jesus' yoke or Jesus' teaching. It's very interesting also that the Great Commission in Matthew 28, with which almost all of us are familiar, is given in educational terms, teaching them to obey all things I have commanded you.
That's a good point. And he even goes so far that it amazes me that you brought that up. But the text amazes me that it even talks about discipling the nations. I think God has an expectation that far exceeds us.
Absolutely.
Oh,
and,
my.
You know, that begins, the home is the seminary of church and state. So as we teach our children, we equip them for life in the world. And as they exert a Christian influence as salt and light in the world, that's a part of the process of discipling the nations, of course.
Yes. Yeah. Good point.
Yeah. Thirdly, reason why education must be Christian education is the antithesis. It's not a term you hear much anymore, but the antithesis originated in Genesis chapter 3, verse 15, which most people are familiar with as the first promise of the gospel. And that's certainly true. But God comes and pronounces hostility. He says, I will place enmity, hostility between you, the serpent, and the woman, between your seed, your descendants, and her seed or her descendants, between the church and the world. And notice that that's enmity, that's hostility.
It is.
That God, the antithesis is the God-ordained hostility between the seed of the woman and the seed of the serpent, between the church and the world, the forces of righteousness, the forces of wickedness, between the kingdom of God and the kingdom of the devil. And that hostility is immediately manifest in Genesis chapter 4, where Cain slays Abel, of course.
Yes,
Education is the prime battlefield for the hearts and minds of children. This is what Thomas Dewey and Horace Mann knew so well, is that if we capture the children, then we can do away with Christianity and we can promote humanism. Fourth reason why education must be Christian education is the lordship of Jesus Christ.
Oh, yeah.
Referring to the Great Commission in Matthew 28, Jesus says, "All authority in heaven and on earth has been given unto me."
We often forget that, don't we?
Oh.
And on earth.
We say, oh, Jesus has all authority in the home, Christian home. Jesus has all authority in the church, of course, given, understood. But Jesus says all authority in heaven and on earth.
He means that, doesn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, just think for a moment. What does it mean that Jesus is King of Kings and Lord of Lords?
That's right. That's right.
It blows your mind when you think about
it. It blows
that.
My mind. I can hardly figure it out. Yeah, good point.
So every area of life, every subject, every academic discipline is to be brought into captivity to Jesus Christ. In 2 Corinthians 10, Paul says we take captive every thought to make it obedient to Christ. We have to have a Christian view of every academic discipline, whether that's art, whether that's science, whether that's physical education,
not
just religion.
You're onto something here, because I once had a pastor told me, there's no such thing as a Christian engineer. There's no such thing as this, that, the other thing. And finally, as I figured out what he was saying, he was a radical two kingdom guy.
Yeah, exactly.
That's exactly what he was. A Westminster West type of guy.
Yep. Well, you know, a Christian engineer is not just somebody who's honest, not just somebody who witnesses to their employees, prays, you know, for their fellow employees, but somebody who is able to apply the teaching of the Bible to engineering.
Yes.
And of course, we know that mathematics and engineering would be an impossibility apart from the truths of Christianity.
Now, that is something people don't want to admit that.
Oh,
that,
it's
that
so true.
Christ is the foundation for all knowledge.
All knowledge.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I studied philosophy in college. And it's so fascinating that the questions that pre-Socratics were asking long before Christ are still being asked by philosophers today. They don't have any answers.
Yes.
They can't account for why 2 plus 2 equals 4.
No.
They just can't do it,
you know?
Descartes, cogito ergo sum, I think, therefore I am, trying to justify how did he know that he really existed, that it was a dream or it was a deception, right? Philosophers are they still can't justify that. They still can't prove that they really exist. God has made foolish the wisdom of this world, you know?
You sound like Bonson from years ago.
Well, Greg Bonson was an amazing apologist.
We had him before I got into the Presbyterian circles. We had him come to a church in Kingston, New York, back in 1995, February. Later that year, he would pass, and it was a big blow to those of us who really appreciated his teaching. He was brilliant in terms of defending the faith.
He was absolutely brilliant. I had the pleasure of knowing him personally, and such a great loss to the church. Thankfully, Many of his writings have been saved and edited, put into books.
Yeah.
So continues to be great prophet and continues to be taught in Reformed seminaries as well.
Right.
Yeah. So anyway, a fifth reason for education needing to be Christian education is education is not neutral. Education is moral and religious in the nature of the case. Proverbs chapter 1, verse 7 says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge.
Yeah.
And Paul in Colossians chapter 3, says, what is falsely called knowledge. I learned this from Greg Bunson, a Christian view of epistemology, which, of course, he gathered from Cornelius Van Til
correct,
at Westminster, right. Who wrote on Christian epistemology, a Christian view of knowledge. Non-Christians don't truly know anything. Only Christians do, because the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge.
Now, somebody might hear this that just tuned in and said, oh, he's crazy. That's hubris. But this is what God says.
That's what God says. You know, I have an illustration. Francis Crick, who's the guy who discovered DNA, the DNA helix.
Yeah.
Famous world-renowned scientist, winner of all kinds of academic prizes, one thing or the other. Somebody asked him one day, so Professor Crick, where do you think Earth and humanity originated from? He said, I think we were invaded by alien beings. Has not God made foolish the wisdom of the world?
Yeah, right.
You know, just crazy. So, and then sixth reason is education is the responsibility of the home. In Ephesians chapter 6, it says, fathers, bring up your children in the fear and admonition of the Lord. Education is not the responsibility of the state, nor is it the responsibility of the church. It's the responsibility of the home. Now, as I said, that could be institutional or domestic, but primarily fathers and the home are the ones primarily entrusted with the responsibility of educating covenant youth.
Now, if my wife was here joining us, I wish she was in this conversation, she would share a story that very, very sincerely, when she had our firstborn, what would be our firstborn in her womb, she knew that she didn't want to send that child to the public school. Mm-hmm. God laid it on her heart. There was no way that he was going into the public school. And that followed course with the next one and the next one and the next one. All four children she homeschooled. She worked her tail off. It was just an unbelievable amount of work.
Yeah, and we homeschooled five. I know
there you go.
Talking about.
There you go. Yeah. And and I didn't help much. I had to travel an hour just to get to work,
sure.
Work all day, then come home, and then I was exhausted by then. I was starting to get into radio, and I can sadly say I didn't help her too much. But, you know, my
same
hat's
to
off to her.
Yeah. Yeah.
Without
well,
her.
You know, in the book of Proverbs, it talks about fathers and mothers.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And, you know, fathers have the ultimate responsibility. But, of course, by and large, because of work responsibilities, we delegate that to the mothers.
Yeah.
But the buck stops with us as fathers, even though the mothers may be doing the bulk of the work.
Generally, I think, is the case the mothers are. They have a leg up. They're better nurturers, I think, maybe than sometimes the fathers are.
Absolutely. One last thing I would say is the importance, and I appeal to your listeners, is to read. I find that people in this generation do not read, and I'm not just talking about young people. I'm talking about people even our generation.
Yeah,
people don't read. They don't read the newspaper. They don't read magazines. They don't read books. We cannot maintain Christian maturity unless people read. Just can't do it.
Oh, I hope we all hear that and let it sink into our hearts. That I need that. I tell you that's key. And even if you're a slow reader, that's okay.
That's
even,
right.
Even if you read just a little bit, you're reading.
Yeah. You know, Neil Postman, does that name familiar
yeah.
to you, Neil Postman? Yeah. He wrote a book he's dead now, but he was an NYU professor. He was a pioneer in the field of media ecology, ecology, ecology. He wrote a book called Amusing Ourselves to Death.
I've heard of that.
And the cover of that book is you have a camera placed behind a family seated on a couch, and in front of the family is a television.
Yep.
And none of them have heads. And the amusing is not thinking ourselves to death. And the thesis of his book is the difference between the print, between print media and visual media. Now, when he wrote it, he was talking primarily about television, right? And personal computers were just coming in. But today, personal computers, cell phones, of course, smartphones, you know, all of that is having, exerting such an effect.
It's huge. It's huge. It's all huge. You got to do is walk into any diner.
Yep.
And you walk past the table, and here's people, husband, wife, whatever, and they're not even looking at each other. They're looking at their cell phone.
I passed a couple in the diner a couple of weeks ago, and I saw that exact scenario. I said to them, I said, what did we do before cell phones? Yeah. They were not happy with me.
Who is this guy? Well, today we're talking with Pastor Paul T. Murphy. He's from New York City. Tell us quickly about the church you're part of, and you are now pastor of evangelism there, I believe.
Yes. Well, we started 21 years ago as a response to September 11th, and the Lord has blessed us. We're trying to get a school started as well. It's in a co-op stage at the moment, but I served as the founding pastor for 20 years. Now Pastor Dan Ragusa pastors that, and I'm the full-time pastor of evangelism.
Good.
And I'm glad to still be able to serve the Lord, serve the church, and take the gospel out and spread the good word.
Our churches have a lot in common. I happen to be in a PCA church. I have some friends who are in the OPC church, and yours is the
United Reformed Churches.
United Reformed Churches of North America.
Right.
And they're all good churches. Many times it depends on the pastor, I'll be honest.
Yes,
you know,
that's true.
You can have it constituted one way, but if you get a pastor that maybe is not really in tune with the standards, in your case it's Heidelberg Catechism, Three Forms Unit, all that. Okay. Our case is Westminster Standards, but they mesh beautifully, and they are basically saying the same thing. Your Heidelberg Catechism is very warm, I must say that.
Yes. Warm, pastoral, personal, practical.
Yeah. And we have here at the ministry, we have extra copies of the Shorter Catechism to send to people for free. When I tried to buy the Heidelberg Catechism, it cost more money, so I don't have too many of those. In a worst-case scenario, we will send one out for free. We'll do that. But these standards, they don't replace the Bible, but they help say, here is what the Bible says in little pieces so you can digest it.
I like to say the Catechism, whether it's the Westminster or the Heidelberg, is kind of like a roadmap to the Bible.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You know, we have, in the old days when we were young, you had Rand McNally paper maps, right?
That's right.
But if you were to start out in New York and try to go to California without a Rand McNally map, you were going to do it all yourself.
That would be tough.
It would take forever, right?
Yeah, it really would.
I'm very thankful that Rand McNally did it for me, right? And I don't have to do all that. Now we have GPS, right?
Yeah.
And Google. But so the a catechism is like a roadmap to the Bible.
Yeah, yeah.
Somebody has done all that work.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
We're talking about why education must be Christian education. And that may be shocking to people. Do you find that shocks some people?
Yes, I think that many Christians do not think of it. Or if they think of it, they're dissuaded because of taxes, right, which go to public education.
Oh, yes.
And then you have to pay for private education. So
oh,
it's
yes.
like you're paying twice. But the eternal welfare of our children and the educational benefits are you know, they're worth anything,
yeah,
to me at least. I think
that's
that
right.
It's inestimable. So
that's right. Our guest today is Pastor Paul Murphy. We've had you on before, and I always like having you on because I appreciate your holding to the full counsel of God, not just picking and choosing, but when God says something, he really means it. And what area have you seen where we as church people sometimes like to brush it under the rug, Pastor Murphy, and it hurts us. It hurts our church. Is there anything that comes to mind that...
I think that we dichotomize the Bible into what's spiritual and private and what's public and what is natural, if you want to put it that way. So,
right.
So we constrict or confine our religion to the confines of our home or the church, and we think that when we go out into the world, we lose Christianity there, that it has little, if anything, to do with where I spend the majority of my time at work.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, a very serious problem in the Christian church at large in North American evangelicalism. Yeah.
Yeah.
If Jesus Christ is Lord, then he's Lord of all. I forget who said it, but if he is not Lord of all, he is not Lord at all.
At all. Yeah, it sounds trite, but it's very, very true.
So true.
How about our wives? How important is it that they are in tune with what our goals are so that we have a joint goal?
Sure. Well, of course, it's important that how can two walk together unless they be agreed,
right?
The prophet says, right? So as a husband and wife, you want to be on the same page. There needs to be theological compatibility, to use that term, between a husband and wife for a healthy marriage. The Bible talks in Genesis about the two becoming one. And while that may be explicitly a reference to sexual union, I believe it's much more comprehensive, is that it's union in every aspect of life.
Right.
So for a husband and wife to deepen in their unity, to strengthen that unity, that's important. But then also in terms of a wife carrying out her responsibilities in the home, in the church, in the world, to be able to know how the Bible, how all of the Bible applies to all of life
all
is
of life.
Very, very important. And, of course, then if the mother is going to be the main person conducting education in the home or wherever, in even institutionally, then she needs to know what that how the Bible, all the Bible applies with life as well.
Yeah. Here's another question. Just popped into my mind. This is dangerous because it's totally unrehearsed. You don't know what's coming. How important is Catholicity as Christians see each other? We just mentioned three different denominations.
Yeah.
Do you ever think about that, and how important is that?
I think about it a lot. I was just talking to somebody about it yesterday. I think that I am wholly ecumenical, I'm a big proponent of Reformed Catholicity.
Yes,
that it's very interesting, and I think it's scandalous. In our tradition, you mentioned the Westminster tradition. Our tradition is the continental tradition.
Continental. Yeah,
but there's the Christian Reformed Church, the Protestant Reformed Church, the United Reformed Churches, the Canadian Reformed Church, the Free Reformed Church, the Netherlands Reformed Church, the Heritage Reformed Church, and they all subscribe to the three forms of unity.
They do,
and
don't
talk to each other.
Yes.
I think that's scandalous.
We got work to do,
and I think the world sees it as well.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How many? I do a lot of evangelism out on the streets, and I hear all the time people say, you Christians can't even agree amongst yourselves.
That's a very
good... And there's a measure of truth to that.
That's a good complaint, really.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate you, and I hope we can talk again in the future. This is Pastor Paul T. Murphy from New York City. If someone wants to get a hold of you or listen to a sermon or whatever, where can they go, Pastor Murphy?
We're on Sermon Audio. Just look for Paul Murphy. I think I'm the only Paul Murphy on there, or Messiah's Reformed Fellowship on Sermon Audio.
Okay.
Our website is MERFNYC, MERFNYC.org. You can find information there and contact information as well.
Well, I want to thank you very much for taking your precious time and joining our listeners today, Pastor Murphy, and I pretty much stay away from New York City, but if I ever go down there, I would love to attend your church. We have some friends in the area. We have out on Long Island, we have Ben Miller. Maybe you know him.
Good man.
A very good brother in the Lord. And our son, Stephen, and his wife, Men Lee, went to their church for a while until they moved to the Hudson Valley. And so, these are precious people. Pastor Murphy, may God be with you, my brother, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Dear listener, please join us next week for another edition of A Plain Answer.